A senior fellow and director of the Center for Community Uplift at the Brookings Institution and author of Know Your Price, Andre Perry's new book, Black Power Scorecard, Measuring the Racial Gap and What We Can Do to Close It, stresses the critical need now more than ever for all Americans to come together and work towards a better future. Historically, the quest for power among Black Americans has often been framed as a struggle for equal protections under the law in pursuit of fundamental democratic freedoms. Coverage has typically focused on measuring progress through comparisons to white Americans, highlighting racial disparities and the impact of trauma from discrimination. Alternatively, progress has been illustrated through the achievements of individual artists and entrepreneurs. Black Power Scorecard presents a new perspective, moving beyond traditional narratives of racial disparities and simplistic notions of exceptionalism to illuminate the undeniable strength within Black communities, as evidenced by improved life expectancies of Black people, as well as showcasing how society can build upon the positive factors that contribute to increased longevity. Andre Perry is a professor of practice of economics at Washington University in St. Louis, a nationally known and respected commentator on race, structural inequality, and education. The new book, Black Power Scorecard, Measuring the Racial Gap and What We Can Do to Close It. It's published by Metropolitan, and we welcome Andre Perry to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us. What a pleasure to have you on the program.
Hey, thanks for having me.
At what point did you start to think of it in terms of a scorecard?
Well, you know, during the summer of unrest, the summer of 2020, in the aftermath of the killing of George Floyd, I mean, there were a lot of agendas that were being put forth. And for me, I wanted to look not just at what harms us. I wanted to look at what helps Black people thrive totally, but particularly during any election cycle, Black issues are generally shoehorned in the various political parties, almost as an afterthought. So for me, I wanted to spotlight the most significant factors that impact thriving or longevity, and say, hey, here are the policy levers. Here are the significant areas that politicos and activists alike must address if they're going to impact positively Black people's lives. So it's really also a tool to hold people accountable to the most important factors that impact well-being and thriving. Because too often, the agenda is really around things that harm Black people, or in the very least, you'll have a slice of how we're living. It may say home ownership or business ownership, but there are lots of other factors that go into a comprehensive policy approach to improving the lives of African Americans.
So what you just described a moment ago, does that come into an overall, a general definition of what is Black power?
Yes, Black power is the ability to thrive, to live your natural life. Power can be measured in years of life. And so for me, what my colleague Jonathan Rothwell did in 2022, we used a machine learning algorithm, Lasso, to identify the most important factors on life expectancy. And so we pulled down 13 of those factors, but then we also spotlighted the places where Black people are living the longest. And so for me, then it became, why are these places doing well? And we have the evidence for why they're doing well. And that serves as sort of, for me, the basis of this book and the work moving forward.
I want you to talk a little bit about that there seems to be a, when you talk about Black power, that it may be compared to overall prosperity or how well their white counterparts are doing. As you point out in the book, that really isn't the discussion that we should be having.
Yeah, one, there is a comparison that we make to Black power, and oftentimes that's to white power, and they're very different. Black power has always been around making sure that your fundamental documents like the Constitution apply to everyone. White power establishes a sort of a hierarchy based upon race. And in addition, we always in research have disparity studies where we compare Black people to white people across different sectors. The problem with that is that we have very different policy histories, that for African Americans who were descendants of the enslaved, we could not own property. We could not, we had less likelihood to pass on generational wealth. And so when you compare the two, it's really an apples to oranges comparison. So what I do with Black Power Scorecard is to say, hey, let's compare Black people to other Black people in various places across the country so we can see how different places are responding to the racism that is a given. And what we see, obviously people will point to what I jokingly say is Wakanda, the District of Columbia, the Maryland, Virginia area, what we call the DMV. But there are places all across the country, in the South, in the Midwest, in the North, where life expectancies are higher and safety is better and families are stronger, incomes are higher. But when you compare Black people to white people in the aggregate, you lose or mask the very real progress that is happening all across the United States. So Black Power Scorecard is really saying, hey, there's work to be done, but let's not discount the progress that can be seen at the local level. And let's learn from that progress so we can help other cities that are struggling get to levels where everyone can thrive.
I would like to ask you about the mood of the room. You brought up about this project coming out of 2020 and George Floyd and the murder of George Floyd and that summer of unrest. And you look at now and where we are in of how things are being dealt with generally when it comes to everyone, but certainly people of color. And I just am interested of, does it have an impact? And I certainly understand what you're saying of we have to stop comparing to the, you know, what's going on overall and what's happening individually. I get that. But when I read something about the National Park Service removing Harriet Tubman and any relationship to the Underground Railroad to African Americans, it seems hard to me to have a scorecard going on that doesn't somehow mirror that.
Yeah, well, what is clear about Black Power Scorecard is we certainly put into context the data that we see. So most people know me through my research on housing devaluation, where we found homes in Black neighborhoods are underpriced by 23%, about $48,000 per home. Cumulatively, there's about $156 billion in lost equity. I certainly put in the context the history of housing discrimination and redlining, mortgage discrimination, and all those different things that sets up the outcomes that we see today and puts in the context how Black people are thriving in spite of those policies. In addition, the book is titled Black Power Scorecard. So it is clearly saying that Black people need power in order to thrive, and we need to hold all politicos accountable towards that. I certainly think the book holds up in this environment, because one of the things that I'm also clear about when it comes to the attacks on DEI and affirmative action in particular, I remind readers that affirmative action and DEI were never the goals of the Black Power movement. They were expedients, they were intermediary steps towards the goal of inclusion. And we should still look towards legislation, not executive order, which we've seen over several administrations now, people use or presidents use to their advantage. But I'm saying that let's stay focused on the things that matter, the things that matter the most on life expectancy, housing, income, clean environment, strong family, safety. And we need to have some discipline around having policies for those things, not sort of executive orders and things that can be erased with a stroke of a pen. And in addition, this book basically says, hey, let's not get into these or invest in these battles around symbolic gestures. So while I appreciate conversations about turning the Little Mermaid black or what the latest comedian to go into the White House, those things don't really have much bearing on the everyday conditions that propel life expectancy. So again, this book asks us to be disciplined around saying we need policy, legislation, not executive orders, not sort of symbolic gestures. We need legislation in order to improve the quality of life for African Americans. So I certainly situate this book in today's context, and it holds up.
It certainly does hold up, and I'm not arguing this point with you at all. I just am looking for in just a clarification of if part of the agenda seems to be to erase history and to erase fundamental moments of history, that will have an impact. If not immediate, certainly down the road.
Yeah, but I argue that when you have home ownership, when you have higher incomes, when you have clean environments, you're better able to withstand these other threats on your well-being. And certainly you can actually teach these things to your children when you have the kind of wealth and assets in your community. You can actually combat, legislatively speaking, these attacks on education and history when you have the kind of assets in your community. So for me, it's not, I want to be clear that wealth and longevity and all these things don't come from nothing and certainly don't come from symbolic wins. And so the attacks on history are real. With that said, how schools are funded are probably more important. Now, I do go in the book like about the attacks on critical race theory and removing certain histories. And there's been a long-standing battle among folks who want to erode Black history on taking away those things. And those efforts are a prelude to racist policy. So for me, I'm always, but I'm still focused on giving kids the critical thinking skills, the concrete skills, so that they can get a college degree, so they can get a good job, also improving the wealth in communities that spur higher education. Remember, what I argue and show in the book, education doesn't predict for wealth. Wealth predicts for education. So we need to be focused on building wealth in places, and the education will come. But these efforts all across the country are certainly a front to what we're doing, but we still have to stay focused on giving people this the basics that will enable them to live long lives.
So let me ask you about education. You write in the book about education and its role in empowerment, and you talk about the critical connection between community education and Black power. How do you see, and I guess, how does community education look to you? What does that look like?
Yeah, for me, I make this comparison to many educators. When I talk to them, and by the way, I was a longstanding professor at the University of New Orleans. I started a college of urban education at Davenport University. This is generally my field. I tell educators you can learn French in the classroom, or you can learn French in France. That there's a lot of effort going into reforming what goes on inside of a school. We also need a lot of attention to what's going on outside of the school. And when you're talking about jobs, transportation, home ownership, these things are as important, if not more important, on predicting the educational outcomes of the residents in those areas. The reason why I talk about housing devaluation, because when you have homes that are devalued, you have less resources in schools. When you zone certain ways, you can impact the overall funding in a particular place. So I spotlight the people who are not only giving kids and families certain skills, but also enriching the entire environment itself. So for me, it goes without saying, I want every child to have a quality education inside the school. I also want them to be in environments where those lessons are reinforced every day. And if they're not getting those lessons reinforced every day, schools are only going to go so far. Also, disingenuous when people say things like, if we could only fix the schools, everything will be all right. No, that's their way of saying, or that's their way of abdicating responsibility for dealing with income, for dealing with home ownership, for dealing with safety. These things are as important, if not more important, on predicting not only life expectancy, but education itself. So in the chapter, I title it The Community as a Good School. We need to be enriching the entire community, not just putting a singular focus on what happens in the classroom.
You talk about reparations in the book, and you argue that the best way for reparations to actually happen and for them to actually support Black Americans is for local communities to bring their agendas to DC rather than waiting on DC to come to them. Where does that stand?
Yeah, so there's a little bit of a debate, if you will, between those who feel that reparations should be a congressional act coming from the federal government, or and those who are actually winning battles of reparations at the local level. So Asheville, Evanston, Maryland, other places that are not federal jurisdictions are moving towards some type of reparations program. California, and other places, it was easier to get it done there. And I argue that when it comes to environmental injustice of today, those are the cases where we can build upon to eventually get a congressional act. I argue that reparations won't come from DC, it'll go to DC. We have many different places right now where Black people are living in toxic areas. And in some of those, not many, but they are actually moving people from these places because of their toxicity, because of the erosion of the coast, that we are asking people to move out of these areas. Now, we don't call this reparations, but it is an admission on the part of government that we must get people out of harm's way. And in those cases where they are moving, they're providing some remuneration for the move. I argue that, hey, if they're doing that, then they should also have a comprehensive look at what the damage has been to that family and provide some type of reparations package for that family. But I also argue that it's not just incumbent upon governments. We also need to point to the polluters themselves, and that's where industry come in. I think that so much of the focus has been on the federal government because they have the largest purse, if you will. But when you have companies that are still in existence, and many times they change names, change owners, but at some point, you have to be responsible for the damage you impart on families and communities. And so I write about in Black Power Scorecard how one, the effort in Houston to move families out of a toxic site due to a historic railroad company can be used as a way to make a case for reparations.
You have obviously written this as a roadmap, as a guide. And I'm curious, it seems with that would come a certain level of optimism.
Yeah, you know, I wrote this book really as a counter to a lot of good work talking about what we're up against and some of the battles that we're losing. I write this to say, this is what we're fighting for. And here are some of the victories that we're having. You know, it might sound counterintuitive in this time, but we do need signs of light in the darkness, that we need to see evidence of hope. And you see the evidence of hope at the local level. There are lots of people and cities doing incredible things to exceed expectations. And I'm when I say that, I really do mean from a measurable standpoint in terms of measuring years of life. There are many cities that they predict for 75 years of life and they're getting 79. Some are below the national average at 74, but whatever is happening, they're performing higher in the actual number. So I think there's lots of good things going on all across the country. And we need to be celebrating this. More importantly, we need to be using these victories, this civic action, as a guide or a blueprint for changes in other places. And that's what Black Power Scorecard is all about. It's about establishing an agenda based upon our thriving as opposed to our dying.
The name of the book is Black Power Scorecard, Measuring the Racial Gap and What We Can Do to Close It. The book is published by Metropolitan Books. Andre Perry, a great pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Be well. Thank you very much. Yeah. Again, the name of the book is Black Power Scorecard. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.